The division was concerned in this case about the finality of the order being appealed. And reviewing the Gluttony opinion from a couple of years ago, we have real concerns about that. So we would like the parties, as the Supreme Court did, to provide supplemental briefing on the question of finality. And we'd like 14 days to file a response to that and then 10 days to answer. And if you want to address finality, you're certainly free to. I don't think whether you are or not, it doesn't matter. But I wanted to get that up front before your time started. Okay.
May it please the court. When a district court sentences a defendant to probation, it may not approve the defendant's use of medical marijuana while on probation. There are a number of reasons why this is. The first and foremost reason is that the probation statute, 18.1.3.204(1), prohibits the court from doing so. Its specific mandate, meaning the statute's specific mandate, is that the court shall provide as explicit conditions of every sentence that the defendant not commit another offense during the period for which the sentence remains subject to revocation. This is so if the court chooses, and the defendant also chooses, to accept the alternative to DOC, that alternative being probation.
Why does that include federal offenses?
That's the question. That's really the crux of the question before this court.
Well, it's part of it. It's kind of a threshold question. If it doesn't include federal offenses, we don't have to go any further. But, so we have to get past that first. Why does it include federal offenses?
The purpose of the statute, as articulated by the statute itself, is to ensure that the defendant lead a law-abiding life and that the conditions also assist the defendant in doing so. A federal crime of possession of marijuana is provided by 21 U.S.C. 844A. The statute, 18.1.3.204(1), requires that the defendant not commit another offense. And the question is, what is another offense? A different panel of this court has answered that question, and it has been law for the last 16 years, and that was People versus Slayton. People versus Slayton indicated that the definition is an offense would include any violation of a statute or ordinance for which confinement is authorized as a penalty.
Would that include violations of law, say, in Canada or Saudi Arabia?
My belief is yes. Because when you travel outside of the United States, you are expected to comply with the laws of the country or state that you're going to. So yes, keeping in mind the provisions of Gluttony, as the court has indicated it recognizes, that the court can decline to impose sanctions or decline to find a violation. But it cannot, and this is the distinction I made in my opening statement, approve the use of medical marijuana.
Well, what's the difference between declining to find a violation and approving?
There's a case or controversy that exists where facts are established. The medical marijuana amendment, Article 18, Subsection 14 of the Constitution, provides that a defendant has a limited exception to the criminal laws if the defendant can demonstrate compliance with its requirements. The court cannot approve something that hasn't occurred yet. In other words, we don't know if the defendant has established compliance. Compliance is not just having a card, it's also maintaining the quantities that are required and not violating those other exceptions, such as using the marijuana in a public place. There are other exceptions also. Other exceptions provided by statute, by regulation.
In 18.1.104(1), there's a definition of offense which specifically says
violation of or conduct defined by any state statute. Now, I realize that the division in Slayton concluded that was broad enough to include a violation of an ordinance, but that's still within the confines of the state laws. And again, we have the ability at least to decline to follow Slayton. So why should we follow the analysis in that case?
Well, it comes back to the mandate of the probation statute, and that is to ensure that defendant remain lawful. A defendant using medical marijuana is not maintaining a lawful status when he blatantly breaks the federal law. While he may be compliant of state law, he is not compliant pursuant to federal law. Now, what the defense argued and what the district court agreed with is that this is an enforcement of federal law. But that's not what this is. This is a recognition of federal law and a recognition that when you break the federal law, you are not maintaining a lawful status. The reason Slayton is correct is, number one, Slayton not only says that an ordinance is an offense, it also specifically says it rejects the application of the statute you cited, the definition of offense under Title 18. It was too constrictive considering the nature of probation's purpose.
Also, the amendment says that it shall be an exception from the state's criminal laws, etc. The probation laws are part of the state's criminal laws.
Well, they're not. And this is why I say they're not.
No. Let's not cut it too finely. It may not be a criminal prosecution, strictly speaking. I think Watney talks about that. But to say that revoking probation is not part of the criminal laws, I mean, it's in the same... It's in the criminal laws. It's in Chapter 18. It's in Chapter 16. It's a part of a criminal sentence. Criminal laws is a pretty broad term.
Criminal laws is an undefined term. And the court recognized when it made its initial comment that it's not a prosecution. And I would assert that that's what was intended by the amendment, is that the defendant, the individual using medical marijuana under its guidelines, is protected from the application of substantive criminal law violations and prosecutions. That would mean possession of marijuana, for example. But it does not include the sentencing laws contained therein. The reason I say that is that probation itself is not a criminal offense. A violation of probation is not a criminal offense in and of itself. Now, the U.S. Supreme Court recognized this. A panel of this court recognized this in People v. Proust. It's 920 Pacific 2nd, 859. Defendant's probation violation led only to a reconsideration of the sentence originally imposed and not to a separate criminal prosecution for violating probation. So there is a recognition within the law that probation is a different species than a new law violation, one that is separately brought and tried.
What about the argument defendant makes that, in effect, this gives an end run around the constitutional provision, which does permit the use of medical marijuana, provided all the requirements are met?
It's not an end run. What we're dealing with is, on one hand, citizens who have not been convicted of a crime, and on the other hand, a defendant who has. Our Constitution, both state and federal, says that you shall not be deprived of an interest absent due process of law. Well, the defendant clearly has an interest, if he has a medical marijuana card, to using that medical marijuana. But the due process of law that's been provided to such a defendant is the criminal justice system. He has a right to a jury trial. And he either accepts that right and goes to trial. If he's found guilty, certain liberty interests are taken away. Our probation statute has dictated that if he chooses probation, and again, this is voluntary by the defendant, this isn't mandated by a court. A defendant never has to accept probation. If he chooses to accept probation, he must comply with its strictures. And here, that's to remain lawful. So in that context, the probation statute overcomes, so to speak, the amendment when a defendant pleads guilty or is found guilty of a criminal offense.
Why doesn't the constitutional provision trump the statute that says that there must be a condition that violation of any or any offense must give rise to or can give rise to the revocation?
Why isn't
the constitutional provision permitting the legalized use of medical marijuana trump the statute that says that the commission of an offense has to be, any commission of an offense can give rise to revocation?
Because the amendment stands on its own, just as any interest a defendant might have. It pre-exists. And when a defendant pleads guilty or is found guilty, that amendment is implicated. It's affected. And that effect here is, if probation is the sentence he chooses and the court chooses to do, then he is subject to its conditions. Much like a liberty interest, if a defendant goes to trial and is found guilty, the court can take away a liberty interest. In fact, it can sentence him to death. Marijuana is no higher in its status than one's liberty interest or one's life. Seeing that I only have 4 minutes left, I'll ask to reserve for rebuttal.
Please, court. I reached my conclusion, and I think from the questions, it's well understood. We have a constitutional provision that carves out an exception for the possession and really the use of medical marijuana. Mr. Watkins cannot be prosecuted under state law for a crime because he uses medical marijuana. The only way he can be prosecuted for the possession of marijuana is for the federal government itself to prosecute its own law for possession of marijuana.
All right, but counsel, the Supreme Court has already held that a revocation is not a criminal prosecution. That's held in Guatney. So we're beyond that. I mean, you can argue that to us, but we're bound by Guatney. This is not a criminal prosecution that we're talking about here.
Well, okay. What the prosecution, as I listen to it, seems to argue, or is arguing, and I'm really got that from their reply brief, is that in order to test the waters here, what Mr. Watkins has got to do is use marijuana, undergo a probation revocation proceeding, and then let's see what happens. Now, the practical result is if you get revoked under probation, you can be sentenced to the Department of Corrections. That is a possible result. So when we talk about, is it a criminal prosecution or not, the sanction of imprisonment is obviously the loss of liberty. And if you don't feel prosecuted at that point, I don't know if you're alive or dead.
Well, counsel, you raise a point, though. Had your client been convicted and sentenced to prison, does your argument go so far as to suggest he's entitled to possess medical marijuana and to use it in prison?
That's not an issue that's before us here, and I don't think any court is going to micromanage the Department of Corrections. To the best of my knowledge, they don't even permit narcotic pain relievers to be used in prison.
I know they don't, but it seems to me the logic of your argument is that they would have to permit medical marijuana because it's a constitutional provision trumping all criminal laws. That's your argument.
Well, my argument is that a state prosecutor has no business, in effect, as Nelson, and I have trouble pronouncing the California case.
Tillicoe.
Makes very clear in their reasoning, okay? And so what it is, I actually started off with a couple of questions, one of which got resolved quickly. Commerce Clause argument went, by the way, very quickly. But I had a question. Why is a state prosecutor seeking, in effect, as the two cases I have cited, to enforce a federal statute? That's the practical effect. They're enforcing a federal statute through the guise of a probation revocation.
If a defendant were convicted under a federal statute for counterfeiting, is it your argument that that would not be an offense that would support a revocation of probation?
Because the constitutional amendment has nothing to do with counterfeiting. The constitutional amendment only has to do with the possession of marijuana, which falls within its ambit. This is very narrow.
The Constitution has nothing to do with the federal statutes.
I'm sorry, say again?
The state constitutional amendment has nothing to do with the federal criminal code whatsoever.
And it couldn't.
So why wouldn't counterfeiting serve the same ground as a possession under federal law?
So you're saying that
it's different and that counterfeiting would be an offense for the purpose of the probation conditions?
Counterfeiting is punishable by imprisonment.
And under the federal act, so is possession of even medical marijuana.
Well, I don't see, let me just think. What we have here is a specific constitutional provision that under state law, you can't, if you comply with the constitutional provision, you can't be prosecuted. And Nelson and Tillicoe, both their logic both says, look, we're state courts, we're state officials, we're bound by that state law. And so therefore, we're not going to take any action to enforce, in effect, that specific federal statute.
But that's what, I mean, I guess I don't see the difference between the medical marijuana then and the counterfeiting. Counterfeiting is not illegal under state law. Under state law, you cannot be prosecuted for it. It is entirely a federal offense. Therefore, you're conceding on the one hand that as to that offense, you could have your probation revoked, even though it would not be an offense punishable by imprisonment in Colorado. But for this other offense, you can. I'm just having trouble following the principle here. What's the principle?
The reason I take that position, one of the prosecution's arguments is you signed an agreement. Just like in Nelson, the guy signed an agreement on a deferred. And the agreement said, you're not going to violate any state, municipal, or federal. And that was in the language of the agreement. So, quite frankly, in preparing this case, I was looking at that language in the probation agreement, which has been argued that Mr. Watkins signed, which basically he had to sign. It's a contract, if you will, of adhesion. You either sign it or you don't get it. Okay, so in the agreement, there's language that says you don't violate a federal law. What I've been trying to argue is that now the constitutional amendment carves out an exception for possession of marijuana, which is the exact behavior that brings us before this court, because my client suffers from a chronic medical condition that's put him in the hospital 3 times. He qualifies as a patient. And so we're not talking necessarily about a person under the language. We're talking about a patient, and we're talking about a medical issue for which, in the constitutional amendment, there is no exception for people on probation. It didn't carve out anything. You got a lot of requirements to comply with that, but one of them isn't that you haven't violated the criminal law and been placed on probation. That language is not in the amendment.
But have any cases that say that conditions on probation can include conditions that infringe upon your constitutional rights? That is, your right to bear arms, your freedom of association, your freedom of speech. The list is pretty long. So it seems to me it's not enough to simply say, you have a constitutional right to do this, because it's well established that probation can be conditioned upon the loss of a constitutional right.
It can and it has, and that's true. Here's the situation that I feel is really odd. California case, the Montana case was dealing with statutes that legalized virtually in the same language we have in our constitutional amendment. If this case were construing one statute versus the other, we wouldn't be talking about the loss of a constitutional right. Going back to my high school civics course, I was taught that the ultimate repository of sovereignty was the people. And in this case, what we did in Colorado is we had a vote on an amendment. And so the people voted this in, and does that mean somehow, because we now have a constitutional amendment, that we can now take that away from a probationer and in effect have less rights than the people accused of crime in Montana and California? And that just seems really odd to me.
Well, all of the constitutional provisions, all of them are at one time or another approved by the people. I mean, the right to bear arms, the right to the First Amendment rights to freedom of association. And again, those can be restricted. Those can be limited by probation. So, again, it's just not enough to say, well, the people have passed a constitutional amendment. We have to decide what the constitutional amendment was intended to do, don't we?
This court has the power to do that. When I say the people passed the constitutional amendment, this was a vote. The Bill of Rights was an act of Congress, and they represent the people. But this is something that our citizens have had a really direct say in.
Are you positing there are two levels of constitutional provisions? If it's passed by the people, it carries greater weight than one passed in some other manner? I'd like to know what your legal authority is for that.
You make that distinction, no.
Yeah.
But I do think that when the people have spoken, as they have here, and there's no language in there excluding people like Mr. Watkins who are on probation, that the question Judge Kopelke asked was right on point, and that is, doesn't the constitutional amendment trump the statute? And normally it does. So if the result of this case is that you write an opinion where you say, well, no, Mr. Watkins really can't take advantage of this. I mean, you really have to read him out of the constitutional provision and say it doesn't really apply to you because you're on probation. But that's not in the act itself. I mean,
but what troubles me about that logic is the argument applies equally to imprisonment. I don't see in applying the logic, I think you would have to say that a prisoner has a right to medical marijuana in prison. I can't see a principled distinction between probation and prison based upon your argument.
Well,
and do you really think
if you're on probation, you're walking the streets. If you're in prison, you're locked up. So that's a huge distinction. And secondly, that has to do with the management of a prison population. And I would not argue that the constitutional provision prevents a prison from managing its own affairs in the way it would keep as far as I know, they keep, even if the doctor says you can keep prescribing narcotic pain relievers, they don't let any kind of mind-altering substance cross the threshold of a prison willingly. Rumor has it that you can get a lot of drugs in prison, but you're not supposed to. And that can lead to all sorts of problems. So I think the question of prison management is entirely separate from the issue we're dealing with here.
Could you, in your remaining time, comment on the recent decision in Boehner versus ICAO?
Mr. Jones was kind enough to let me know about that decision, as I didn't know about it before today. But right in the constitutional amendment, it excludes employment-related matters. It provides a defense against criminal prosecution, but an employer can refuse to employ you if you use marijuana. They have the right to do that under the amendment. I don't see that case is applicable to the issues that we're facing here today. The language of the amendment really takes care of that, I believe. And I'll got 52 seconds, but unless you have a question, I realize Judge Jones doesn't share my view, but I see a big distinction between the two, and I don't think they're equal. All right, thank you very much, Your Honors. This is my first trip here and my only trip here in over 30 years of law practice. It's a bit nervous.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Excuse me. Your Honors raised an issue, and that is whether if what they're asserting is that there's a right to medical marijuana, wouldn't that right extend to DOC, for example? Well, first off, Boehner did make a comment about whether or not there's a right to medical marijuana, and it specifically said there isn't a right to medical marijuana. Now, granted, that is an Industrial Claims Appeals Office case, but it was also a case that was disseminated and ultimately agreed upon to be published. And that proclamation in that case was agreed upon by a majority of the judges on this court. And as such, it carries weight. Considering the fact that it is not a right, that would suggest that the legislature, as provided by the amendment, can prescribe certain restrictions. And in fact, they have. In 24.1.5.106 sub 12b5, the legislature has prescribed restrictions on who can use medical marijuana. They specifically say, no, a patient or caregiver shall not engage in the use of medical marijuana while in a correctional facility or a community corrections facility, or subject to a sentence to incarceration. Probation is just such a sentence, subject to a sentence to incarceration. The first line is in a correctional facility, so it's saying an existing sentence. The second is subject to a certain sentence. Violation of probation is just such a sentence. It is subject to the incarceration if a violation occurs. And under that statute, and also pursuant to the regulations prescribed by the Department of Health in 5 CCR 1006-2 Reg 12, they also make that same statement. So considering the amendment which says the legislature shall put these prescriptions into effect, and the legislature has done so with these regulations, these restrictions, combining all these together, it does fit under the probation statute when you say that a federal crime is a violation or a new offense that a judge cannot approve of.
Well, the fact that the General Assembly has done something doesn't mean that it can do something else. And the fact that it has done something does not mean it's constitutional. I mean, it seems to me you're arguing that just because they have authority to kind of flesh out this amendment, if you will, that they can do pretty much anything they want, but they still have to be acting consistently with the intent and the terms of the amendment. Isn't that correct?
Yes.
So we're still, I mean, that's the ultimate question here, isn't it? It's not, has the General Assembly done something? Is it consistent with the intent of the amendment?
I agree.
All right, now let's go back to the language of the amendment. The language of the amendment is it provides an exception to the criminal laws. And that's really broad. It doesn't say criminal prosecution. Like the California statute says criminal prosecution or sanction. That's not what our provision says. It says the criminal laws.
Criminal laws has been used in multiple occasions, and in all of those circumstances, they don't mean, as the court has indicated, a broad understanding of criminal laws. In, for example, the parole context, in People versus Harper, they indicated that parole violations do not punish criminal defendants for violating criminal laws, but merely reaffirm the original sentence and require the defendant to serve it while in custody. Grand juries, their duty is to inquire into offenses against the criminal laws of the state of Colorado. They don't review probation violations. Also, attorney discipline, CRCP 250.1, says that attorneys shall comply with the criminal laws. The cases that that follow that indicate that attorneys who violate the criminal law violate that provision. So criminal laws, in the context of our case law, means criminal prosecution and not violations of sentences.
Counsel, I see you're out of time.
Could you give us a statutory citation again? The use of medical marijuana,
yes,
by persons subject to incarceration and so on.
25-1.5 106 sub 12 b Roman numeral 5.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, counsel, for your excellent argument. The case will stand submitted, and we will wait for supplemental briefs on the finality question, and then a written opinion will issue in due course.
Thank you.